supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Looking to get some exercise in the dead of winter? Why don't we tour our galactic neighborhood on SkyTalk with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. And Derek, our galactic neighborhood encompasses more than merely the Milky Way.
Oh, indeed it does. The local group of galaxies is now numbered at somewhere around 45. And so among that group of galaxies happens to be two nearby amorphous galaxies. That means that they are not structured like a spiral or anything definitive. But these two, called the Large and Small Magellanic Clouds, are easily visible to the naked eye in the southern hemisphere.
Even the Large Magellanic Cloud is small compared to the Milky Way.
Oh, yes, it is indeed much smaller. Ours is a really large galaxy and very massive. Now, because of that size and mass, it has an interesting gravitational pull on the two Magellanic clouds. Those clouds are actually being pulled toward our Milky Way, and in about 2.5 billion years, astronomers estimate, these two galaxies will begin to merge with our own galaxy. In this particular instance, with the Magellanic clouds only being 170,000 light years away, which is really close, that gravitational pull of our Milky Way is exerted on those, pulling those two galaxies towards us.
Is there any concern that the lifespan of our sun might be mitigated by this possible approach?
I think this is one of the interesting questions to ask about this merger. Mergers of galaxies typically don't include collisions of stars, but when the masses begin to merge, the shock waves caused by the mass of material moving together often causes some interesting effects, like triggering the birth of stars. As we look at this collection of stars in the Large Magellanic Cloud, scientists have been able to identify that the rate of production of stars is on an interesting upswing, which is the exact opposite of what's happening in our Milky Way. The star production in our galaxy is on the decline. So perhaps one of the effects of this merging of the two galaxies is that shockwaves will cause the production of stars in our Milky Way and increase the rate of production of stars in the Large Magellanic Cloud.
What do you say we come much closer to home and consider a tiny collision, a meteoroid striking the moon?
If you were out observing the total lunar eclipse last Sunday, and you were observing with a pair of binoculars in the exact right location at the exact right time, you might have had the opportunity to catch an incredibly brief flash of light in one sector of the moon, which experts have now been able to clearly identify as the crash of a meteoroid onto the surface of the moon. And if you happen to be watching with a pair of binoculars in the right spot at just the right time, you would have seen something that may have looked like a very, very tiny flash bulb going off on the surface of the moon.
Was it just a lucky strike, or does this happen fairly often on the moon?
Actually, it happens more frequently than anyone would suspect. From 2003 to 2018, 435 impacts on the surface of the moon have been recorded by NASA's Meteoroid Environment Office. This is just a small number of what possibly could have been happening as well on the side of the moon that we can't directly observe. So while we may want to think that these events are few and far between, it's much more of a function of being lucky enough to be looking in the right place at the right time to see these events taking place.
Could a meteoroid leave a crater-size pockmark on the moon?
It certainly could. If we look at the surface of the moon, we can see that there are craters of all different sizes, large ones, small ones. In the case of this particular impact, it's estimated that the meteoroid itself was about the size of a football, so the crater would be very, very small and hard to see just looking at the surface of the moon, even being able to find it. We can pinpoint generally where it fell on the surface of the moon, but it's hard to identify the actual crater itself at this point.
Derek, with clear skies, what's available to be seen overhead this week?
We're in for a real treat. In the morning, between 6:15 and 6:30 a.m., we have a trio of planets visible in the east-southeastern sky. The brightest one of the three, of course, is Venus. The next brightest one is Jupiter. And coming in below those two is the planet Saturn. You'll see them on a diagonal line that stretches towards the east, coming down toward the horizon. And if you can identify where Venus is toward the end of this week, you'll see that Venus, being the brighter one, is bracketed by the other two planets, Jupiter being above Venus and to the right, and Saturn being significantly smaller and down to the lower left of Venus. As we move toward the weekend, a thin crescent moon is going to slide by each of the three planets successively, going right through the weekend. So this is a wonderful time to be able to figure out which planet is which just by watching how the moon moves past each one. First, it will stop near Jupiter, then near Venus, then on towards Saturn.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Sky Talk.